Group is coming to McComb Center for the Performing Arts for 3 nights only. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, January 26th, 27th, and 28th at 7:30 p.m. Don't miss out on this exciting performance, The Blue Man Group. Buy tickets at McCombCenter.com or call 586-286-2141.
The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschelton. We've got a great show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we will be interviewing Detroit's own Stephen Goldman, the director of the Holocaust Memorial Center in Farmington Hills. They have a brand new exhibit, which is actually quite fascinating. We're going to talk about that. They have a big gala opening this week as well on Holocaust Memorial Day, which is January 27th. The portion of the week is the portion of Yisro, the story of the giving of the Torah. Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, can be found in chapter 18 and following in the book of Exodus. We've got a wonderful assortment of Jewish music. We got a real surprise for you during the second half hour of the show. This is something that I came across while plumbing. I don't know what I was doing over there. I was diving into the depths of the Jewish Hour music archive and came out with a real jewel. You're going to really appreciate this one. Stay tuned for that. There is a Hasidic story, a short, quick, very poignant Hasidic story at the end. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. The 38-year-old mother of six, Daphna Meir, was killed by a Palestinian at her home in Otniel. The lone attacker broke into the Meir home in the middle of the day and stabbed the woman repeatedly in front of her daughter. Security forces caught the 16-year-old terrorist. The IDF canceled all work permits for Palestinians in Jewish areas of the West Bank as a result of the attack. 20 Jewish families moved into two buildings in an all-Palestinian section of Hebron. The family said Thursday that they had legally purchased the two homes from Palestinians and that the previous inhabitants had already moved out. Rioting soon broke out afterwards between Palestinians and Jews near the Cave of the Patriarchs. The IDF did evict the families for not getting government approval first. Stay tuned, it's going to be a continuing saga. Israel began building the third stage of the security fence. This part stretches for 19 miles along the Jordanian fence. Fences were built along the Egyptian border, in the West Bank, and along the Golan. The fences are meant to keep out illegal immigrants and terrorists. Some good news. A new natural gas field was discovered in the Mediterranean off the coast of Israel. The reserve will triple Israel's natural gas supply. Israel is already a natural gas exporter because of earlier finds off the coast. And finally, according to a new study which was published in U.S. News and World Report conducted by the Wharton School, Israel is ranked the 8th most powerful country in the world behind the U.S., Russia, China, Germany, the U.K., France, and Japan. Power was defined as a leader economically and politically with strong international alliances and a strong military. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in a growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Harry Schulfinman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. We have online Mr. Stephen Goldman, who is the director of the Holocaust Memorial Center, located here in Farmington Hills. Wonderful, beautiful Farmington Hills. How are you today, Stephen? Oh. How are you, Stephen?
Okay, how are you this morning?
Good, thank God, thank God. We're doing very well.
You managing to stay warm?
We're trying. It's inside. They have heaters here, yes. They've invented the furnace. Okay, there is a new exhibit opening up this Wednesday, January 27th. My French is deplorable. I would try to say that this is à la mémoire de Enfant de Porte, and that might be somewhat similar to what it actually is. But if you could tell us, it's in memoriam of the 11,400 French Jewish children who were deported from France and exterminated by the Nazis in the years 1942-44. Tell us first of all the significance of that event and why it requires a special memorial that's going to be up in the Holocaust Memorial for 4.5 months.
About 4 months. There are several things that are important about it. Of course, it's always good to remember those who were taken from us, especially by tyranny and injustice, and especially children. 1.5 million children total were killed in the Holocaust. But the remarkable thing about this exhibit is it's an American artist who spends half her time in Paris. That's where she lives with her husband, who's also an artist. And she was beginning to notice around Paris the several thousand plaques that are put on buildings where children would gather, whether they were preschools or nursery schools or group homes, that sort of thing. And the Nazis came in and took the children. And it's taken a long time for France to accept its role in the Holocaust and to accept the role that the Vichy government played in the Holocaust. And these plaques are placed there. They're bronze, they're brass, they're engraved, they're carved. And she noticed them. She's a calligrapher by trade, Eleanor Winters. And she's an excellent calligrapher, but she said, I want to do more with these and draw attention to it, both for the reason that she's Jewish, she wants to remember the Holocaust, and she really loves her second country, France. And what she has done is she's taken the words that are very moving, yet very simple, on each of these plaques. And what she had done is she's embellished them with other forms of ink and gold leaf and shadowing, and made them into works of art. She starts with the original quotation, and then she manipulates it brilliantly. And she's just a wonderful watercolorist. But all the work is still based in the words, in the calligraphy. And it's a stunning exhibit, but I think the most important thing is what has happened over the past maybe 10 years in France about the acceptance of their role in the Holocaust, their guilt. And I think people are beginning to, in France, are beginning to accept that. I think this is a wonderful way to have begun that. The plaques are now co-sponsored by the Musée de la Shoah, the Holocaust Museum in Paris, 17th arrondissement, and it's a wonderful small museum. And if you go to Paris, you certainly should see it. But I think Ellen has done a wonderful job calling our attention to these facts, and of course to the children.
Okay, let me ask you. Let's just since we're talking about it, would you say the French are somewhat owning up to the anti-Semitism? It says that actually there was like a small drop in anti-Semitic incidences last year. I mean, some of them were like really horrible. I mean, but aside from that, and then we have this whole thing that's going on where to show solidarity with the French Jews, French people are walking around the streets wearing yarmulkes, and they wear them in the parliament, and they have them at official gatherings, and people are wearing yarmulkes. Do you think there's this, the French have suddenly had this epiphany?
Well, it's hard to talk about French politics. It's more complicated than ours in some ways. But I think there has been an acceptance from the people that there has been increasing anti-Semitism, increasing violence and verbal assaults against Jews. Is it because there's a large Muslim population? That's possible. But I think the French and the French government have accepted the fact that Jews are part of the fabric of the country and of the major cities. Of course, France is Paris is a major city there. And it's difficult, like it is for our country, to balance the needs of the French people vis-a-vis. They have always been an open country, welcoming to people who want to move there. And they're coming to grips with this this dichotomy that they now have a huge Muslim population, some of whom are anti-Semitic, many of whom are not, of course. And it's an interesting dichotomy for them in that I really believe they want to be welcoming of their Jewish citizens. They don't want them to leave and go to Israel or other countries or the United States. They want them to be part of their community, yet they've got this thing that happens. Jews, when they went to France, or when they started in France, they became French, like Jews in the United States look like every other American for the most part, where many of these Muslim immigrants are not. They're staying in enclaves that are very cloistered, and they don't feel the need to become French. And I think that's a problem for the French people, and they see that. That Jews are part of there. They're their neighbors, and they're their co-workers, and they speak French. And they're doing the same things they do, whereas some of the immigrant communities are not. And that's difficult. It's also difficult in Germany when they see that same thing happening. So is the country becoming less anti-Semitic? I don't know. I know a number of people that have been there recently and had no problems, no repercussions of their trap during their travels through the countryside or through the city. So how are they coming to grips with it? I don't know. But they are coming to grips with the idea that they were complicit with the Nazis.
Okay, if you're just joining us, our guest today is Stephen Goldman. He is the director of the Michigan's own Holocaust Memorial Center. We're talking about the memorial which is going up for the deported children from France that were exterminated at the hands of the Nazis, Yimach Shamom. This exhibit, has it already been hanging up in the French Holocaust Memorial, Stephen?
I don't know where it started out with a few pieces, and then became more pieces, and she just recently, 2 weeks ago, sent me 2 new pieces she wanted to put in it. I think small parts of it have been in La Musée de la Shoah, but this is the first time it's had a major showing outside of France, and we're pleased to have to be premiering it here.
Mm-hmm. How's it been received? I mean, I'd like to know what the consensus was when they were displayed in France, for example.
Everybody wonders what it's going to look like, and when they see it, the work is quite beautiful. I've had one of our employees helping me do the final framing and glazing, and she's just blown away by the beauty of this memorial art and how emotional it is and how deep these interpretations are. Very flat things. It's not like taking a three-dimensional scene and making it two-dimensional. It's taking something two-dimensional, and she virtually makes it three-dimensional. And I think when people come, they will see the power of these memorial plaques as interpreted by Eleanor Winters.
Okay. If you could describe the you said there's 72 different plaques, and I thought they were pen and ink, but you're telling me they're more than pen and ink. What's the theme? If there's 72 different pictures, different portrayals, what were this? I don't want to have a list of all 72, but the subject matter which is displayed through these, and what was she really trying to convey? Everybody knows if there's 11,000 people who were 11,000 children who were killed, it's a tragedy. It's a horrible thing. But what was she trying to convey by this whole exhibit?
I think she's trying to bring the emotional impact that these plaques on buildings have to the rest of the world. You know, when you go by and say, from this building, 27 children were deported, and sometimes they have the names, and they're taken by the Nazis on such and such a date. And then, but outside the country, you don't know that. But when they're here, you get the same thing. In addition, the true beauty, the physical beauty of these calligraphy paintings is emphasized with her illumination of that work. And I find it emotional, and I think other people will as well. And it's an interesting way to bring us something that is really tied to the land. I mean, you attach a plaque to a building, it belongs to that building. And only if you happen to walk by and happen to notice it and happen to speak French so you can translate it, do you understand the impact. But if you see these works with the original words, which you sometimes cannot decipher, and a translation of them, and suddenly you realize this is 72 instances of children being taken from a safe place, captured, taken away from their parents, taken away from their guardians, and taken away from their community, and summarily murdered. It's an amazing realization.
Mm-hmm. So these children, the Nazis had a plan of just killing children per se and not even leaving the parents behind. This was just against children because children are mouths that need to be fed that can't contribute to society.
Right. They can't sew, they can't build, they can't hammer. So they are just nothing but a burden for the Nazis. They are also in the Nazis' quest for extermination, for extirpation of the Jews from the world, they are the next generation. If there are no children to grow up to be Jews, it removes the need to execute another generation of adults. If you get them as kids, it's easier.
Mm-hmm. Understood. It is quite disturbing, to say the least. The opening, the exhibit that's happening on January 27th at the memorial, where these things are going to be displayed, is the artist herself, is Eleanor Winters, going to be there?
Oh, Eleanor will be there, absolutely. And she'll give a little talk about her work, and then she'll talk in the gallery, kind of a gallery talk about the work itself. So we welcome people to come. Pre-admission that day, because the 27th is the International Holocaust Day of Remembrance, as declared by the UN. General Assembly in 2006, and we'll be free to the public during that day, and we'll have several survivors speaking, including one who was hidden in Paris. So we're kind of tying that to the exhibit, and it is a very special day, and I know that Eleanor really appreciated using that important day in the world calendar to open her exhibit.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And so this is going to be hanging in the museum. The Holocaust, for those who don't know, where exactly is the Holocaust Memorial, Stephen?
The Holocaust Museum is at the intersection of approximately 12 Mile and Orchard Lake Road. We're 28123 Orchard Lake Road.
Just north of 12.
We're right near right off of 696, so we're easy to find. We have plenty of parking, and like I say, on Wednesday, admission is free.
Okay, that is so awesome. We want to thank you for coming back on and keeping us apprised as to what's going on. And we should hear only good things from the Holocaust Memorial.
Well, thank you very much, Herschel. I appreciate you taking the time to call and talk to me about it.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
The Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Herschel Finman, you're listening to The Jewish Hour. These things are always very, very inspiring. We have, this is now we're entering it, now for something completely different. We're entering the musical phase of the show. This is Shuki, who is an up-and-coming star on the Jewish music scene, or at least he'd like to be a star. And it's actually a pretty, pretty piece. I like this one. It's called Lecha Amar Libi. It's taken from chapter 27 of Psalms. And it's, "To you, God, is my heart."
Lecha Amar Libi, Bakshu Panai. Lecha Amar Libi, Bakshu Panai. Et Panecha Hashem, Avakeh.
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. This is the point where we do something klezmeric. And we have, for your listening pleasure, this is the Kalmutke Philharmonic. The word Kalmutke, I used to know what it means in Yiddish. I think Kalmutke either means depressed or mixed up or confused or something of that point. Maybe it means mixed up because this simply is called Klezmer Fusion. It's a jazz klezmer fusion. Let's listen. ¶¶
Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. As I said at the onset of the program, I was rummaging around, foraging, doing the hunter-gather type thing, the gathering-type gather thing, and in the Jewish Hour music archive. And I came across, totally and completely covered in dust. This is something that's been buried there, like behind the wall in the back, in the corner, in the dark. This is Neil Sedaka. We all know Neil Sedaka. Oh, I love my grandma. No, we're not going to do that. But Neil Sedaka, in 1966, made an album of international songs. And he's singing in all these various different languages. And one of them is called the Israeli Melody. And he sings standard, what was then standards for 1966, of Israeli songs. So I hope you enjoy this as much as I do. This is Neil Sedaka, the Israeli Melodies.
Shalom Aleichem. Arca halinu, arca halinu, arca halinu. Baharashnu vegatzaranu, baharashnu vegatzaranu. Hava od lo katzadu, hava od lo katzadu, hava od lo katzadu. We're building our land, tilling our soil. We're building our Israel. With courage and might, we're ready to fight for our land of Israel. Hey! Baharashnu vegatzaranu, baharashnu vegatzaranu. Havaod lo katzanu, havaod lo katzanu. Have a look at you. All right. Sing it, sing it, sing it, sing it. Have a touring at Highland. Bamoshova. Haina, 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 the chavina, mi bencha. Yelitzava, Seina, Seina, Havana, Torena, Kayalim, Bamoshova, Haina, 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 the Chavena, Hiver, Hayelitzava, Seina, 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 Havana, Torena, Seina, 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 Seina. Come where all our friends will find us in the city square.
Tzeina, 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 tzeina. Come where all our friends will find us with the dancing there.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herr Schulfinman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. This week's portion is the portion of Yisro. It is found in chapter 18 and following from the book of Exodus. The portion is called Yisro, meaning Jethro. But if you ask sort of like the common man on the street who knows his Bible stuff, and you would say, what's the significance of the portion of Yisro? They would say, oh, the giving of the Torah. It is, of course, the greatest miracle ever wrought. It is what makes Jews Jews, you might say, is the giving of the Torah. Totally, completely redefined physics and man's purpose in the world. And yet, there's this whole business thing about Moshe's father-in-law as to why it's there is very perplexing. We could have just gotten right to the point where they could have called the portion something like the Vayichan, which is would have been really what the portion chapter 19 starts with. It says Vayichan Yisrael Neged Ahar, the Jewish people camped by Mount Sinai. Could have started the portion that way. We, instead of calling it the portion of Jethro, would have called it the portion of Vayichan. And everybody would have been the happier thereof and had this whole story about Jethro, which the primary focus of the story of Jethro actually happens after the giving of the Torah. In fact, it all happens after the giving of the Torah because the verse comes out and says, after all of these things, meaning the Exodus, the splitting of the sea, and the giving of the Torah, Jethro comes by now, and he comes and moves in with his daughter, son-in-law. So as far as chronology goes, put it someplace else. Stick it in the book of Numbers somewhere, you know. So, but no, Jethro merited that not only does he get to be one of 7 people who have a portion in the Torah and named after him, but he gets probably the most central, the crescendo, the pinnacle of Judaism happens in his portion. Such that when we read the Ten Commandments in this week's portion in the synagogue, everybody stands up and faces the Torah and is supposed to see themselves as though they are receiving them at Sinai. This is heavy-duty stuff going on over here. So who was the man Jethro? Jethro is introduced as being a high priest for the country of Midian. Now, high priest meant that he was the head honcho with the idolatry, which meant that he's leading all of the ceremonies, the slaughtering of children in honor of this deity, the feasts, the orgies, etc., etc., etc. And he's like the head dude. The fact that he decided to become Jewish really emphasizes what the Torah and the capabilities of those who adhere to its tenets are capable of. It says in the Talmud that Jethro worshipped every deity before coming to Judaism. Now, Jethro, I can imagine,
If Moses would have decided, yeah, you know, he'd make a fine father-in-law too, because he did check out the family. It's one of those things you should you know, see before you get married is what's the family going to be like. How stupid would it have been for Jethro to say, oh, here's another rock that people bow down to. Let me bow down to it and see what that does for me. You know what? That's not doing it for me. Let's go find another rock to bow down to. What a tremendous waste of time. Absolute stupidity. That's for sure not what Jethro did. The answer to Jethro's accomplishment of checking out all the other gods is actually delineated in the second paragraph of the Shema, which Jews say twice a day at least. In their daily prayers, it says, you shall not bow down to other gods. Very interesting statement. Why doesn't it say there you should not bow down to idols? It says you should not bow down to other gods. So what is therefore a god? A god is something which the individual attributes life-giving forces to. That's a god. All of these deities have a spiritual source. It wasn't that they just made this image and said, you know, this kind of looks like a god we want to bow down to. They're not so stupid. Well, idolaters are not dumb that they actually think that this thing that they made created them because they just created it. It's a physical representation of something spiritual. I don't have to give a lesson in idolatry over here. It says that the godliness comes into the world and it's channeled through what's referred to as the 70 ministers. It's talked about throughout the length and breadth of the oral tradition. And these 70 ministers, the ministering angels, are in charge of directing godliness to each nation. And each nation has its spiritual source. 70 nations, of course, being based on the 70 nations that are mentioned of the descendants of Noah way back in the book of Genesis. And so these quote-unquote gods do have some sort of life-giving power. And there is something to them, like, for example, the Baal worship. The Baal, which is mentioned throughout the later books of the Bible, that was the Canaanite god, was based on actually what was going to be the prophecies of Yechezkel. Yechezkel hadn't prophesied them yet, but people were in the groove. They kind of knew about these things. That the Yechezkel saw a chariot flying through the sky, and one of the things that was pulling the chariot was an ox. One of the creatures had the face of an ox. All the creatures had a face of an ox. And so this ox then became the conduit by which godliness now comes through, or then came through, to the Canaanites. And so their god had the head of an ox on it. So Yisro, who was so in tune, he was Mr. Spirituality, was able to analyze, well, let's take a look at Baal, for example. And let's see, where does it line up as far as spirituality is concerned? And thus realizing, oh, it's only in that chariot vision thing. That's really very, very low. And the Canaanites were receiving their life force from a very low order on the creation spectrum and said, Yisro then realized, I'm not going to be a Baal worshiper. Let's go check out something else. And checked out all these different mazoilos, these different sources of these spiritual sources for these deities that people ascribe life-giving power to. And said, no, all of these just don't make it. But rather, let's go find something else. And then, so Moses introduced them to this entity. We'll call him Yudke, Vavke. People pronounce the names, Jews don't pronounce the name. But basically, God. We're not going to say God of the Jews because that's ridiculous. God, God's God for everybody. This is the creator of the universe, the creator, the maker of creation, and beyond that, the infinite first cause. Now, Yisro couldn't wrap his head around that, because how could you? God is infinite. And realized this is really where our focus should be. It says, by Yisro realizing this, this is something that Jews always knew. Of course, you know. It says, Solomon writes that he sees the advantage of wisdom from foolishness as the advantage of light from dark. What does that mean? Is it totally, completely describing this scenario? If you're in a room, and let's say there's a 60-watt bulb, or the equivalent thereof, illuminating that room, the room will be light. But it won't be necessarily light enough for you to sit and read. So what will you do? You will beef up the amperage a little bit, the wattage somewhat, and let's say you put on 200, 300 watts of or the equivalent thereof of electricity, and now it's comfortable to read. There is a greater appreciation, one might say, if one is in a totally dark room and one were to say, put on a normal thing, a 25-watt bulb. There's a greater appreciation for the light, which is only 25 watts difference, than if a person were to say, go from 60 to 300, which has 240 watts difference. 10 times the amount almost. There's 10 times more light, but if a person's sitting in the dark, now it's light. Whereas before they were sitting light, now it's lighter. It's the same thing. It's just a continuum. But here there's a total and complete transformation. We are converting darkness to light. Jethro, Yisro, Moshe's father-in-law, is considered the first convert to Judaism. Everybody, of course, was not Jewish before. All the Jews were not Jewish before the giving of the Torah, but they naturally assumed the position of the Jewish people with the giving of the Torah. Jethro had to go through a conversion process, similar, probably exactly alike, what we have to do today if someone desires, who's not Jewish, to become Jewish. And it says that with Jethro, there was an appreciation for the Almighty as light coming from darkness. And so this specifically, even though it's not chronology, and in the chapter 18 of covers a period of about a year and a half, beginning after the giving of the Torah and ending after the story with the spies, and this is where the Torah is given in this portion as an indication that that's what we have to do as well. Because we were given the Torah, we have to take the darkness of the world, that which the obfuscation of godliness, the concealment, godliness is hidden deep in the world, you might say. Remove all the schmutz, remove all the junk and garbage which is the physical world, and bring about a spiritual awakening. And that is accomplished. The Torah, that's what the Torah is all about. You want to know what the manual for Judaism is and how Jews are supposed to be? Hey, we got the 5 books of Moses. It comes with a manual, might say. So this is what we have to do. We have to be able to use the physical world in a way that we make it spiritual. Then we understand and we see why it is that Jethro is the portion, Yisro is the portion that the giving of the Torah is in. We have to take a quick commercial break and we will be right back. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for the Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, It's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herr Schulfinman, here you are listening to The Jewish Hour. Would you like to get in touch with me? Easiest way? Go to my website, rabbifinman.com, www.rabbifinman.com. And right there on the homepage, it's a link. You hit, click on the link, it goes, sets you up in your email. You send me an email, I send you an email. We become best friends forever. We just have this wonderful relationship, and life is good. What else will you find on rabbifinman.com? Well, there's archived editions of the show for the last 5 weeks. There's the archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U-Story. These are missives presented by yours truly and other media other than just listening. You can watch, you can read, insights into the Torah, stories, this type of thing. There's also classes that I do that are uploaded weekly. Very deep stuff, it really is. It's not me doing the deepness. It's Tanya, which is the basic Hasidic book. And the Alter Rebbe was deep enough, and I'm just trying to convey it. But we're hopefully presented in such a way that deep material can be understood to people, let's say you call them the uninitiated with the deepness of it, and you'll then have an appreciation of the deepness, the depth of Judaism, and, well, you'll be part of the initiated then. It's a good thing. You'll also find, just by matter of coincidence, which there is no coincidence, of course, the donations page. We are almost done with January on the calendar. As far as paying for January, not even close. We need your help. We know the Jewish Hour is, for the most part, listener-supported. We have been on air 20 years we're going on now, and every single week I have to go through this, and every single month I think, is this going to be the month that we don't make it? What's going to be with the Jewish Hour? But every single month, I actually stopped doing that because every single month it gets done. And people like you listening come through. They go to rabbifinman.com. They click on the donations page. They donate. It's such an easy thing. If you have PayPal, for example, this is how easy it is. It will take you 30 seconds. And not only that, there is an option on the PayPal that you can do it monthly. So, I think you can do it with your credit card too. I haven't tried it with my credit card, but I've seen it with PayPal, where you don't even have to worry about it anymore. It won't even take you anything. 30 seconds, and then you're set for life, or at least until your credit card expires. And this way, you don't have to worry about it. The money is transferred. You receive automatically from the credit card people that you gave a donation to the Jewish Hour. And you didn't even have to do anything at that point. So, and even if it's $5 every month, that's what you want to do, that's also good. Because 5 times 12, last I counted, was 60. And a $60 donation happens to be pretty significant. So you don't have to give it all at once. And if you wanted to hit the $100,000 button on the page, that would also be good. So whatever amount you happens to be, whatever you feel comfortable with, you can go to rabbifinman.com. We need you to do that. Step up. It is, of course, we are a 501(c)(3) corporation. It's tax deductible, so you'll be paying less in taxes. It is a charitable organization, so this will count as part of your tithing, your 10% of your income, which means that the Almighty will appreciate what you're doing, and the Jewish Hour will then be able to continue in perpetuity so that you will enjoy listening to it. I know you enjoy listening to it because we're 51 minutes into the show, and you're still here, so you must be because you enjoy it. So go do it today. And if it would be that enough people would do the monthly thing, I would not have to spend, like, say, 4 minutes out of every show doing this pitch business to get you to do it. And we could talk about something more important than just supporting the show. But let's just see it happen, hopefully. We're counting on you, folks. This story, there was a man who was in need of a blessing of
I don't remember exactly what the blessing was. This is a story that goes back to the late 1960s. And so he went and traveled to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And it just so happened that at that time, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was leading a Hasidic gathering of Fabrangan, which the scenario is such as the Rebbe is sitting at a very long table, in the center of a very long table, which is covered with white tablecloths. And people are gathered around the table. The table is actually on a platform, which was, I would say, the platform comes up to my waist. So put it about 5 feet high is the platform. And then there's a table on top of that. It's a 4-foot table, so that's 9 feet up is where we're talking about at that point. And then in this area surrounding this table, surrounding the Rebbe, there are bleachers, and people are standing on the bleachers all around. And there could be anywhere between several hundred and many thousands of people, depending on what the day was, what the occasion was. And so there happened to be such a gathering. And this man was told, back in the 60s, that in between, when Rebbe would stop talking, people would sing, they would say L'chaim to him, and you could approach the Rebbe and ask for a blessing. And so that's what this person did. He waited for the Rebbe to stop talking, people started singing, and he went over to the Rebbe and he said that he needed a blessing for such and such. And the Rebbe asked him, "And what's with tefillin? Have you been putting tefillin on other people?" Tefillin are prayer items which are worn in the morning by Jewish men over age 13 as a way of showing a commitment to Judaism. We won't go into a whole lesson of what tefillin is. For that, you can look back through the Jewish Hour archives on iTunes or Stitcher or JPodcast Network and go back and find the interview with Rabbi Levi Kagan, and we talked about the significance of tefillin. I don't even know how many years ago that was, but it's there. And so he asked him, "Have you been putting tefillin on with other people?" This would have been obviously after the 1967 war in Israel, because that's when the Rebbe started asking people en masse to go put tefillin on other people. So the man said to the Rebbe, he said, "Rebbe, I don't even have the commitment that I put on tefillin every day myself." So the Rebbe's response was, listen to this, the Rebbe's response was, "Is because you don't do it, does that mean that the other person should lose out on the opportunity to do it?" You can't argue with such logic. And so the man said, he'll try. And actually, the man actually began putting on tefillin every single day. And he began putting on tefillin on regular. It became a regular thing for him that every single day he would put on tefillin with somebody else. The idea is over here, the story is that the Rebbe said, "I don't care what you're doing. Things need to get done." The Rebbe's famous line. There's something called the alphabet. If you know A, teach somebody A. Don't wait that you have to say, "I have to know A through Z before I can teach A." That's ridiculous. No. You know A, teach A. When you get to B, then you can teach B. So you can do it. You don't have to be a big tadadam. That's going to do it for us. I'm going to thank you so much for tuning in. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. Stay warm. We'll see you back again next week. Take care.